With us is one of our favorite guests, Mike Berto, the healthcare economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Louisiana. And there have been some major developments in the last few days regarding what's going on with healthcare in America. And a brief aside in an interview with Bill O'Reilly of Fox News before the Super Bowl, President Trump went further than he ever has in acknowledging the reality that any hope of quickly replacing the Affordable Care Act has been dashed. Yes, I would like to say by the end of the year, at least the rudiments, but we should have something within the year and the following year, the president said. That admission is a serious disappointment for the president's most fervent supporters who sent him to Washington believing that he would move quickly to dispatch the health care law. Mike Berto, any significance regarding the last few days and weeks of the jockeying back and forth on so-called Obamacare?
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. And just want to say very quickly my thoughts and prayers out to everyone who's been affected by these tornadoes today. Some miraculous stories popping up on Twitter this afternoon. In my Twitter box, I saw, for example, a lady who hid in her bathtub. Her house collapsed basically on top of her, and she walked away from it and gave an interview 5 minutes later to the news media pulling up. So it's going to be one of those days. As far as healthcare goes, absolutely. Since President Trump was elected, has begun to install his cabinet, very different policy positions coming into the government now. We've been monitoring very carefully any changes or adjustments that they want to make to the Affordable Care Act, because we have several hundred thousand people here in Louisiana who have private insurance funded through the ACA, and our Medicaid expansion now is approaching 400,000 people mm-hmm. that have gained coverage through Medicaid. So critical times, critical issues. Now, the Republicans went off site last week and had a retreat outside of Philadelphia. The stated goals of the retreat were to get everybody together in a quiet place, staffers, senators, House members, and kind of come to some consensus on how they wanted to go forward on healthcare and tax policy, for that matter. And the day after the retreat, it appears that they didn't really reach what we would call a very strong consensus on what to do about mm-hmm. the ACA. But the day after they got back, four very critical bills were dropped into the hopper at the House. All four of them could have the effect, if they make it through the process, of stabilizing the individual risk pools, which are very unstable right now. Lots of carriers bailed out last year. These four bills could actually create a little more stability in the healthcare law and make it so that we might get ahead of this kind of runaway train of rate increases we've seen in the individual market. So I am encouraged by all four of them.
One of them is from Senator Bill Cassidy, isn't it?
Well, Senator Cassidy dropped his plan. He and Senator Collins from Maine put a plan out called the Patient Freedom Act of 2017. It is a rather unique approach to amending or adjusting the ACA. I'm not an expert, but I have read through the bill. And it appears that what they want to do is to let every state choose for themselves one of three courses. Either, number one, continue as is with ACA funding, the same way to get it today, with a very slight decrease in funding, less than 5%. That's kind of required if you want to get something done through reconciliation. You have to show a budget mm-hmm. impact. The second choice is to give the state sort of 95% of all the funding they would have received under the ACA and let the state design its own healthcare program and system, sort of like a per capita or block grant, but not exactly, that would actually cover individual private insurance and Medicaid and a lot of things. And then the third option is basically you can decline federal assistance and keep doing whatever you want to do with your state funds. So it's almost like it throws the ball back into the state's court. There are things certain states complain about in the ACA. The Cassidy bill seems to want to give them more control over the process and access to almost all of the funding mm-hmm. they would have had otherwise.
Is that repeal and replace, though?
I don't know the answer to that. I would say no, only because you can't completely repeal the ACA unless you can get 60 senators to say yes to whatever you're doing. And I don't think anybody's got that mantle or that much of a mandate at this point in time. So I think we're going to see a lot of adjustments and repair is the current watchword. We've kind of watched the narrative in D.C. shift, you know. It started out repeal and replace, and then it became, well, can't we just lower costs for everyone? And now I'm hearing more noise around the term repair. And so the four bills I mentioned earlier were actually all bills that are designed specifically to repair the ACA's risk pools. So one of the bills, for example, makes special enrollment periods, which are very easy to abuse, less abusive, harder to take advantage of. One of them takes a 90-day grace period and shortens it to 30 days. We've seen an enormous amount of abuse of grace periods inside of the exchanges, so much so that a large section of the people who buy through healthcare.gov here in Louisiana pay 9 months of premium and get 12 months of coverage because of the grace period. So I'm encouraged by these things because they could stabilize that risk pool.
877-217-5757. If you'd like to talk to Mike Berto, your call is toll-free wherever you are. Mike is the healthcare economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield, and he has been following the Affordable Care Act since it was signed in March of 2010, and it's been quite a 7 years. And right now there's a new sheriff in town, a Congress that is in accord with the president. So you would think that it would be possible to do what the president wanted, replace Obamacare. But that's not happening as envisioned by some. And this is not a new development. I'm looking at a story on January 19th, which was actually before President Trump took office. One day, Representative Tom Price of Georgia, the candidate for Health and Human Services Secretary, said then that it was going to be a tough assignment to repeal Obamacare. Mike Berto, Chief Healthcare Economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana, is with us. He's been around a dozen years with Blue Cross, and he certainly was on hand when President Obama signed in the Affordable Care Act as the law of the nation in 2010. And now it is under review in a big way, and the president said his goal was to replace it and repeal it. And now the president says it's going to be probably a year before that can be accomplished. And there are, as Mike just said, four plans that are floating right now with probably more to come. And we'll get his take on what may or may not happen. 877-217-5757 and Jim at inkstershow.com if you would prefer to send an email. Mark and Zachary, good afternoon. Mark, you're on the Jim Inkster Show.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Mike, I have a quick question for you. Let's go back 15 years and look at health insurance cost. And I seem to remember that the premiums were much lower and the benefits were much better. And now we fast forward 15 years in the future, and here we are. Premiums are much higher, and it seems like we get less health coverage than what we originally bargained for. What do you think is the driver behind that? Is it legislation? Is it the health of people in general? That seems to be what I struggle with in understanding why costs have increased so much. Thank you.
Yeah, that's just a rich and delightful question.
A lot of layers to it,
and ones that he deserves to have addressed, I want to tell you from every. Let's start with the easy part, okay? Today, when you give an insurance carrier like us, like Blue Cross, a dollar of your hard-earned treasure, we are required under federal law to make sure that 80 to 85 cents, and if you work for a bigger company, it's 85 cents of that buck does nothing but buy somebody health care. Now, last year, I can tell you that our finances showed that 40 cents of that dollar that you gave us paid for somebody's hospital stay. Inpatient hospital care was 40 cents of every dollar you gave us. When your doctor would see you for an office visit or order an imaging study or a lab or therapy, any kind of outpatient procedures, that ate up another 20 to 25%, I think it was 27% last year, of the money that came in the door. And then filling prescriptions was 19%. So before your dollar even came in the building and went out the other side, 87 cents of it had bought health care for someone. So if your premiums are going up at a faster rate, you've got to kind of break it down and say, well, what did Blue Cross do with all that money? And it's very simple. We bought health care for people. Health care costs are the driver of your premiums by federal law. The feds say if we don't spend 85 cents on a dollar on these big companies' health care, then every cent we keep for ourselves, over 15 cents, and believe me, out of that 15 cents, I've got to pay taxes, I've got to pay fees, mm-hmm. I've got to pay salaries, I've got to pay broker commissions, mm-hmm. I've got to keep the lights on and the doors open with 15 cents on the dollar, and a good 3 to 4 is taxes. So if I keep more than that, if I'm too profitable and I only spend 84 cents, federal law says I have to convert that penny to cash and give it back to the member who gave it to me. I'm under a constant evaluation of a rebate structure that requires you to get the money back. So I can tell you that your money is paying, by and large, almost entirely for healthcare. 15 years ago, the percentages were a little lower, but the cost of healthcare was dramatically lower. If you want to go back and do a little history lesson, in 1983, I was diagnosed with osteosarcoma, with bone cancer. Very fortunate to be here now, 30 years later, cancer-free. But back then, I had an entire year of chemo, 2 major surgeries. My dad had really good health insurance at the company he worked for, but we had all the bills right in front of us, and that entire year of treatment was $30,000. Today, a course of chemo can easily run $30,000 a month.
Why has that gone up so
dramatically? Because it can. Because it can. There just aren't any caps. There's no federal law that says, you know, healthcare is a business just like any other.
But that
other
has nothing to do really with Obamacare, does it?
No. In fact, Obamacare actually put hard and fast rebate caps on us. So this protection you have now where the carrier has to spend 85 cents of the dollar on your insurance, that didn't exist in Louisiana until 2010. So it's not Obamacare as far as in the main driving up healthcare costs. If you are a person who buys individual insurance, mm-hmm. you're experiencing big healthcare increases now because the people in that risk pool have a lot of health conditions, and the healthcare costs in that small pool are going up really fast.
George in Baton Rouge, you're on the Jim Engster Show. Good afternoon, George.
Yes, I would just like to have his opinion of what it would take to make this more affordable.
More affordable. You mean health insurance more affordable?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, there are a couple things. If you get your health insurance through work, which about 90% of us that have health insurance get it at your job, then your employer is very heavily involved in how much he pays and how much you pays, and you have less control over exactly how much you have to pay. If you're buying your health insurance in the individual market, we are constantly advising the administration on things that they can do that will make the health insurance market more stable and keep prices under control. The keys for an individual are very simple. Keep a relationship with your primary care doctor. Keep your weight under control. If he tells you you have high blood pressure, take your meds, because if you don't, you'll get a stroke one day. If you have high blood sugar, if it's climbing up, and he says modify your diet or take your metformin or whatever he tells you to take, please do it. You know, I've fought it for years when I was in my late 30s and early 40s. Finally, when I was about 45, my doc said, look, Mike, you're a metabolic train wreck, dude. You need to, if you do this and this and this and this, you won't have a heart attack, a stroke, diabetes, or kidney failure. And you want to talk about cost in the system. There's nothing more expensive than 2 of those 4 things happening mm-hmm. to you. So if you play ball with the docs, if you keep your weight under control, get a little exercise, take your meds, the odds of you having to spend a ton of money on your own health care go way down. And it helps the whole system control costs. Those are things mm-hmm. we can do every day.
The last year of life is quite often as expensive or more so than all the years that preceded, isn't that the way it works?
The last statistic I saw indicated that around half of the money you spend in your entire life on healthcare comes in the last 18 months of your life. I don't think there's an easy answer to that problem. I mean, we are compassionate people, and we want to take care of our elders and make sure that they have a great last period of their life, no matter what it looks like.
877-217-5757. Thank you for calling, George. A story in the New York Times on Friday, just 4 days ago, in the headline, Sprint by Republicans to Repeal Health Act Loses Its Momentum. And then it reads, insurers are threatening to exit the Affordable Care Act's market unless the Trump administration and Congress can quickly clarify their intentions. Will they support the existing public marketplaces, encourage people to sign up, and keep federal assistance flowing to insurers or not? So are we in a quandary right now?
Well, there's an immediate need that the administration and Congress have to reach an agreement on. And I'll try not to get too wonky, but essentially, the people who buy individual health insurance on healthcare.gov, once their income is below, about as a single, about 25 grand a year, 200% of the federal poverty line, they get a pretty significant amount of assistance paying their deductibles. Mm-hmm. So you imagine, you know, I'm a single guy, I make 18 grand a year, and I've got health insurance through the Affordable Care Act. My premium might only be $20 or $30 a month after the assistance mm-hmm. I get for tax credits. But that policy's deductible, specified in the way the feds define insurance, is probably $2,500. So where am I going to get $2,500 to jumpstart my insurance if I make that little bit of income? Well, what happens is the feds designed a second layer of assistance into the ACA. It's called a cost-sharing reduction. And it actually lowers the deductibles, pre-funds it, so that someone who's low income and needs to use their insurance doesn't avoid getting care because they can't afford their deductible. Mm-hmm. And it's very effective. In 2010, when Congress flipped, Congress basically told the White House, we're not funding these things. We're not going to fund cost-sharing reductions, and they zeroed the line in the federal budget. So the Obama administration responded by repurposing administrative money that was in CMS or in other departments, and they paid these cost-sharing reductions with money Congress didn't approve. Congress got upset. They sued the White House. They won the lawsuit. And so the cost-sharing reduction money is scheduled to stop flowing to carriers at the end of February unless the president and the Congress can reach an agreement on how to fund it.
That's the end of this month.
That's the end of this month. And ideally what would happen is they'll reach an agreement, the money will keep going, and these low-income folks can keep their deductible help. Right now the problem is that if they don't fix it, Blue Cross, for example, we're still responsible for providing that benefit even if the feds don't pay us. So by the time we bill that into premiums for next year, it's another 17 or 18% rate increase that the whole market would have to bear that buys silver plans just to replace that money. So we need a decision on that very soon. If they decide against paying them, I do think you'll see some other carriers, more stress for carriers to leave the market, which we don't need right now.
Obamacare may have been one of the biggest issues, if not the biggest, in the presidential election. And Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton certainly had different visions for our country on the campaign trail. And now the president, Donald Trump, who was one who was calling for repeal and replace, is saying not so fast, that this is going to take some time. And I'm sure that you have questions, and Mike Berto is an authority on these things. 877-217-5757. If you missed him earlier, he said there were four plans floating about, including one from our U.S. Senator Bill Cassidy, who's a doctor in his own right. The Speaker of the House has a plan. How does his differ from that of Senator Cassidy?
Well, the interesting thing to me about Speaker Ryan's plan, and you can look this thing up online, actually, it's called A Better Way on Healthcare, and it's not a terribly tough read. I actually gave it to a friend who's not a healthcare wonk, and he went through it pretty quickly. And it was put forth by the Speaker in the summer of 2016. The main things that Speaker Ryan's plan focused on were doing away with any sort of mandates, individual mandate, employer mandates, anything that required individuals or businesses to provide a very particular type of coverage. When you read the plan, you get the impression that they're not thrilled with the way the ACA consolidated the individual market, the power of it, back in D.C. It essentially, the ACA tried to unify that individual health insurance market and make it so that in all 50 states, there was kind of a uniform definition of what's a health insurance policy, what's a valid policy. Because prior to the ACA, we literally had 50 different definitions of what was a legal health insurance policy you could sell. And a lot of times, they didn't look very similar. If you moved from Louisiana to New York, you'd find that health insurance in 2010 looked very different on an individual basis. Ryan's plan seeks to roll that back, to give the states more authority and more control if they want to take it up, to change the way health insurance is defined, maybe make it so that it doesn't have to cover the large slew of things we cover nowadays at first dollar. It's also got a few parts in it that require a different stream of financing, so much that states can choose, pick and choose more about what they draw down. But I don't look for Ryan's plan to be this thing where they just drop it in Congress and go, everybody vote on this. But there are bits and pieces of it that I would expect to reappear in policy circles going forward.
Your number again, 877-217-5757, toll free. Jim at inkstershow.com works as well. Katie in Baton Rouge asks, how much is Medicaid draining the cost of health care in this country? Is that a substantial driver in the cost?
Well, I don't know what the federal appropriation for Medicaid is. Some of the things that I think are important to keep in mind when you think about the Medicaid program is that it's funded significantly with federal dollars. Our existing Medicaid program before the ACA part kicked in was funded about 62% by federal dollars and about 38% with money we raise locally. The expansion of Medicaid is on a sliding scale, starting with 100% federal funding, nothing from the state, and then sliding down to a 90-10 ratio, which is in the statute, I think, that it stays at 90% from 2020 on until somebody legislatively changes it. Last time I checked, CMS's complete budget was $1.1 trillion, which is a lot of money. How'd you like to be Tom Price, you know, the guy who just got put in charge of HHS? His budget is $1.1 trillion.
All right, so that's probably more than 50% of the overall federal budget.
It's, well, keep in mind the Fed right now is borrowing $700 or $800 billion a year, so it's probably a third. I would say the total amount is that we're spending as a nation is about $3.5 trillion.
It's so much now.
Yeah, and remember that most of that $1.1 trillion, is actually Medicare, right? About $300 or $400 billion of it is Medicaid. So the care for the seniors and the trust fund and all it build up is probably 2/3 of HHS's budget.
All right.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is.
World-changing.
So is there any movement toward one plan or the other right now?
No, what I am seeing right now is some stopgap measures, as I said before, that I'm optimistic about, because policy folks who are in the know, who just want the individual market to survive, have been trying for a long time to get the administration or Congress to look at these five or six things they can do to stabilize the market. Somebody asked me the other day, they said, Mike, why do insurance companies keep fussing with being in the Affordable Care Act? It's so much trouble and so much regulation. It's so expensive and it's so much work. I'd like to kind of tell you my personal view about why we're in the ACA. Before the ACA launched, we had 120,000, Blue Cross did, 120,000 individual customers in the state of Louisiana. On 1/1 of 14, they said anybody can enroll. Well, no matter how sick you are, no matter what's going on, come on in. 80,000 new people showed up that we enrolled in 2014. Those 80,000 folks, many of them had never had health insurance in their life, ever. And so when we took a look at their health conditions, this is what we found. We found those 80,000 people were twice as likely to be obese as the normal population. They were twice as likely to have substance abuse. They were 2.5 times as likely to go to an emergency room, which means they had no relationship whatsoever with a primary care doc. They went to the ER because that's what they knew healthcare was. They were 2.5 times as likely to suffer from hepatitis C. No point in that now. There are pills you can take and hep C goes away. So you don't want people to have it and they can spread it around. that were 3.5 times as likely to have HIV, a very underserved population in the state, people with HIV who could never get the proper care. They were 2/3 more likely to be diabetic and 50% more likely to suffer from depression. And for the first time in their lives, many of them, they could get care.
Mike Berto of Blue Cross Blue Shield, healthcare economist, has generously spent time with us last month and this month, and as this issue percolates, we certainly will be calling on him frequently. We were discussing the budget projections for fiscal year 2017, which will end on June 30th. The outlays for the government, $4 trillion, revenues, $3.4 trillion, and deficit, $559 billion. That's the projection. And the biggest cost is health care, and there is no doubt that that has gone up every year for time immemorial, but also a big way every year since Obamacare. And, Mike, you noted that some of the people who couldn't get health care are now getting it, but it's at a big cost. And these are benefits that will be hard to do away with. For example, how can the government now do away with not covering those with pre-existing conditions?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the optics of it are very difficult to overcome. And I think that maybe that's why we're seeing the current Congress, current administration, sort of putting the brakes on the replacement plans, not being in as big a hurry as they were a couple weeks ago, because they're actually having to look at the bits and pieces of the repeal or replace package and do a serious look at how that impacts the man on the street. And although a lot of people saw their rates go up when the healthcare law passed, they're still probably at least 6 or 8 million people out there who couldn't get coverage in any form prior to the ACA and now have coverage, even though it may be very expensive.
And the president also says he likes the fact that young people can stay on their parents' plan until they're 26.
You know, and that was one of those very typical regulations that were very different from state to state. Every state had a different rule. And some of them, if you stayed in college, you could stay on your parents' plan until you were 23 or 24. In some states, when you were 19, you were on your own. Carriers would go beyond that. They would say, well, maybe we'll just cover everybody to 25 because it's better for this group or that group. The ACA did bring stability to that fact across the marketplace. They said, look, whether it's your employer offering coverage, whether it's a self-funded group, whether it's an individual buying coverage on the marketplace, if a parent has a policy and he gives birth or has legally adopted a child, that child is available all the way to age 26. He can stay on that plan. That's been a huge source of comfort, I think, for people like me who have 2 kids in college at the same time, and I don't want to push them too hard. What if they want to go to grad school? What if they want to, advance their careers? They can have good health insurance while they get their life started. So I've been fine with it.
All right. This development with the election of President Trump in some ways may precipitate some movement that otherwise would not happen. I would imagine that if it had been President Clinton with a Republican Congress, we would have had a stalemate. What has the election of Donald Trump done to perhaps change the landscape?
Well, I know a lot of people are confused. I follow a lot of policy wonks in D.C. who are trying to figure out what's going to happen next. The important thing to remember, I think, if you really want to have a crystal ball about what's coming down the road, is that there's an old saying in Washington. Whenever I go there, people always tell me this. They say, Mike, policy equals personality. Personality equals policy. So when you take a look at the way the federal government is run, the president has at his disposal, the day he's elected, 4,000 jobs. He literally can hand out 4,000 positions within the administration. By my count, about 1,600 of those are manager level and above, and about 400 of them run the different federal agencies. So if I take 400 key people out of the federal government who might have an ideology that I disagree with, and I replace them with 400 people who have an ideology that is concurrent with mine, clearly the way the Fed runs is going to change. And so that's all playing out right now. Not all of these new appointees are going to show up in a Senate hearing. In fact, most of them don't. So we've got to kind of monitor the situation and see what's important to the new guy who runs CSIO, an agency you never heard of, the Center for Consumer Information and Insurance Oversight, runs the exchange, healthcare.gov. That's their baby. And so the guy running it or the lady running it, they have a ton of influence over how they do business within the law. So we're waiting to see who's going to get appointed to run CSIO so that we can reach out to them and find out what's important to them. Imagine that process repeated over and over and over again, and you get the idea of how big a swing this is going to be from when we had the Trump the Obama administration moving to the Trump administration. Right now, it's a big ball of uncertainty, and business people don't like uncertainty.
Mike Berto will be with us hopefully on a regular basis to discuss what's going on with Obamacare. And right now in Louisiana, for those who wish to comply and be insured, you don't have a lot of options, or we don't have a lot of options, do we?
Well, it's a very large financial risk for any health insurance company to put products on healthcare.gov, because as soon as you put those products up there, you can't limit who takes them and you can't limit how many people you take. So everybody that shows up is going to become your responsibility for that entire year at least. So it's a little scary. And when carriers don't have a certainty about the fact that they can break even on that market or maybe just lose a little, and they have significant investments somewhere else, they tend to go. If you take a look at Louisiana's market now, we had some of the big national carriers here, but from their perspective, I suspect Louisiana's a bit of a backwater to them. You know, well, Blue Cross here in Louisiana is the Louisiana franchise. I can't pick up stakes and go to Texas or go to Mississippi if the Louisiana market turns on me. I have to make this work. And so we're down in our exchange now for this last open enrollment. We were in all 64 parishes with 10 or 15 products in each location. You had Vantage Health Plans out of Monroe, also in almost every parish, maybe in all of them. And then Humana stayed in a couple of parishes where they have very strong network relationships, just a few. And that was it. All the other carriers had pretty much abandoned Louisiana.
Well, Mike Berto, thank you for being with us today, and we look forward to a return engagement very soon.
Afternoons mean traffic updates every 10 minutes on the fours and intelligent conversation. I'm Jim Inkster, inviting you to join me from 4 to 6 here on Talk 107.3.